Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events relating to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome to our show tonight, Polygamy, What Love Is This? Thank you for inviting us into your homes. This is a live broadcast from Salt Lake City, Utah, and it's a telephone call-in program. And we would appreciate your phone calls. Our telephone number is 801-973-TV20, 801-973-8820. If you have questions or comments about the topic of our show, or you can email them to us at tv@aboutpolygamy.com. And if you have any friends or relatives who live in the Boise, Idaho area, you can tell them they can watch our show on a delayed broadcast on Sunday afternoons and from 4 until 5 p.m. on KCLP Channel 18 in the Boise area. And also our show can be watched on live streaming video around the globe from our website, whatloveisthis.tv, and you can also watch all of our previous shows from the same website, and you can find our future programming guide on that website as well. To find out more about us, you can go to our website, shieldandrefuge.org, where if you're in a polygamy group, you have questions or concerns, or if you need help, or even if you need help to get out, we would love to help you. You can give us a call. We have a toll-free hotline. It's 877-425-9993. Give us a call, and let's just talk. We'd love to talk to you and help you however we can. We also have a support discussion group, and we meet monthly. We normally meet the last Monday of each month. The last Monday of this month, however, is Memorial Day, so we haven't decided quite what day we're going to meet for May, and we will let you know in future shows. But if you have polygamy in your background or in your neighborhood or in your future, you're welcome to come to the support group and listen to our discussion and have input of your own. Grab a friend and plan on coming to our next meeting. You can call or email us for the details. And again, our email address is tv@aboutpolygamy.com. On Tuesday, April 26th, we received an email in our email box, and I would like to read a part of it to you. It's from a faithful viewer, and he said, "I watch your show every Thursday without fail. Thursday, April 21st, the show was not there. Ruined my whole week. Hope it was just a technical problem and not a power play by someone who doesn't appreciate the truth. Keep up the great job, and may God bless you always." End quote. Well, we want to thank you and other viewers who were concerned about us not being here on the show 2 weeks ago. Actually, it was a power play. There was a huge storm that came through that day and knocked the power out of the residences, the businesses around the area of the studio, and they were not able to get the power restored until after 8 o'clock, and of course, that was too late then to broadcast the program. But we're back again tonight. We are grateful for our faithful viewers who missed us, and also for God who continues to pour out His mercy and grace upon us. And we also would like to remind our viewers that when we discuss issues on this show, to remember that doctrinally, polygamists are Mormons too. The doctrines that polygamists embrace are from early Mormon church teaching, so our discussions frequently echo the mainline LDS church beliefs. And also keep in mind, as we especially through tonight's show, that most polygamists believe in the LDS canon. They believe in the plural great price, the Doctrine and Covenants, as well as the Book of Mormon, but each polygamy group does have their own private prophet, just like the LDS church has. In 1850, in Liverpool, England, Orson Pratt, one of the 12 apostles of the LDS church, wrote an article entitled "Divine Authenticity of the Book of Mormon." In part, in this article, he made this challenge, quote, "This book must be either true or false. If true, it is one of the most important messages ever sent from God to man. If false, it is one of the most cunning, wicked impositions ever palmed upon the world, calculated to deceive and ruin millions. The nature of the message in the Book of Mormon is such that if true, no one can possibly be saved and reject it. If false, no one can possibly be saved and receive it. In a matter of such infinite importance, no person should rest satisfied with the conjectures or opinions of others. He should use every exertion himself to become acquainted with the nature of the message. He should carefully examine the evidences, end quote. Well, Orson Pratt goes on to say that if after a rigid examination the Book of Mormon is found to be false, that knowledge needs to be published to the world. And he said, quote, that those who continue to publish the delusion may be exposed and silenced, end quote. Well, Orson Pratt challenges everyone to discover by thorough and objective research and study if the Book of Mormon is a valid document. If it's true, we need to embrace it. If not, we need to reject it and expose those who continue to perpetrate the deception. Well, this challenge has been taken up by a lot of people for a lot of years. And of course, they have been severely criticized for daring to test the authenticity of the Book of Mormon, even though their leaders invited the test. But evidence has been examined, claims have been thoroughly investigated by laymen and by faithful Mormon followers, and some have been disciplined and even excommunicated because they tested and questioned the evidence. Professionals and critics have also taken up the challenge, and Orson Pratt was right. It's either a truth to reckon with, or it's a nasty, deceitful trick forced upon humanity. Our guest tonight has been intensely involved with these investigations, and along with her late husband, discovered and printed and making available irrefutable evidence that the Book of Mormon has many external and internal problems. And we're going to discuss some of those problems tonight. I'd like to introduce and welcome our special guest for tonight's show, Sandra Tanner.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Would you like to tell our viewers about your bookstore and your website where they can gather a lot of good information?
Yeah. Certainly. If anyone wants to pursue the Book of Mormon problems further, they can contact me through Utah Lighthouse Ministry. We have a bookstore here in Salt Lake, and we have a website that's huge. But we, for 50 years, have been researching and writing on Mormonism and showing problems in the LDS faith and with their scriptures, and specifically the Book of Mormon. When Gerald and I were LDS from fifth generation Mormon families, when we left, it was from many different issues in Mormon history, but one of the big problems we faced was the whole Book of Mormon issue.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone wants further information, they can just contact me through our website, which is www.utlm.org, and we'll be glad to send them out a free packet of information on some of the Book of Mormon problems.
Mm-hmm. And you've done the studies, and you've done them for years, and you've got it all printed out, and,
yes.
And you've been criticized for doing what Orson Pratt told you to do.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about the process. The process of the translation of the biblical manuscripts is easy to research and easy to verify, but that's not the case with the Book of Mormon. So let's start with, how did the Book of Mormon come to be, and what was the process of translation?
Well, one of the differences you see between the Bible and the Book of Mormon is that the Bible was written over hundreds of years with different authors, and there's different manuscripts. And so it's not like it just suddenly appeared on the scene, and you have to just trust one person that this story ever happened, because you've got hundreds of years with many different authors. But with the Book of Mormon, it just suddenly appears with Joseph Smith, and so there's no manuscripts, there's nothing that goes back before him.
Mm-hmm.
He is the only source for information, the only source for a document. You can go to university and learn Hebrew and Greek and do your own translation of the Bible, mm-hmm. but you can't go to school anywhere and learn the Book of Mormon language and do your own translation of it, because first off, there's no manuscript. I mean, we don't have the original plates it was written on.
Right.
So all there is the manuscript Joseph Smith wrote out. So then the question becomes, how did he write the manuscript? What is behind this? His story was that an angel came and appeared to him and told him that in a hill by his house were stored these sacred gold plates that had this record of this ancient civilization that happened here on America, the story of these people who supposedly were the ancestors of the American Indian, and this was, like the Bible, a record of God's dealing with the people here. Over a period of years, he's prepped for this job, and then eventually he goes to the hill and gets the plates. But then when he goes to translate them, it isn't like what you would normally think of a translation, because when you think of Bible translation, you think of scholars with their manuscripts laying out, and like in the New Testament, comparing different early Greek texts and to compare how the different copies read, and you do a translation from those into English. But with Joseph Smith, the witnesses that were there when he translated said that he had a magic stone that he placed in his hat, and that he would hold this hat up to his face and look at this stone, and then he would see kind of like a text message. The English would be on that stone, and he'd just read it off to the fellow that's copying it all down. So it's a magical process. It's not a studied translation in a normal sense. Mm-hmm. Now, in Mormon manuals, like Book of Mormon manual that they use in their seminary program, they show pictures of drawings of Joseph Smith doing the translation process, mm-hmm. but they show him with the plates where he's running his finger across the plates as though he's doing a real translation.
Right. Yes.
But the people that were there in the room when he did it never talk about him handling the plates as he translates. He's not running his finger across the page to keep track of what line he's on or
and
something.
There's no witness at all that's ever said that he did translate it directly from the plates,
no,
right?
No. All the people that observed what he was doing that left statements for us, mm-hmm. they all say the same thing. He was looking at a stone in his hat and dictating the English words off to his scribe. Well, then this puts all the bad grammar, everything in the Book of Mormon back on God.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
But it also makes no way to check his translation, because when he got through with the translation, he gave the plates back to the angel.
Right. There's no way to double check on him. And one thing, as I've mentioned this before on the show, that as I started doing my Bible studies, mm-hmm. I had a Bible dictionary I could go to. I had an Encyclopedia of the Bible and a concordance, which I used, wore it out using it, because every word in the Bible was in that concordance. Mm-hmm. So I called the Deseret Bookstore one time. Actually, I went down there and I asked them if they had a concordance of the Book of Mormon. Mm-hmm. They didn't even know what I was talking about. There was no way that I could check even a single word in the Book of Mormon to see what original language it was or the original definition.
Right. One of the curious things on the translation, speaking of the stone and the hat, Joseph's story was that when he found the plates, kept with the plates, was an instrument called the Urim and Thummim, mm-hmm. which is a spinoff of the Urim and Thummim mentioned in the Bible. But Joseph Smith claimed that in this box where the plates were was this Urim and Thummim that God had specifically prepared and saved to enable him to translate.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what he uses to translate. No one describes him using these. And the description of the Urim and Thummim was that they were like a big set of glasses in a silver frame with big crystal or stone lenses. And even the Mormons, when they draw pictures of Joseph translating, they never show him with this Urim and Thummim that they always say he had with the plates.
Now, were they given to him with the plates by the angel?
Yeah, they were in the box that the angel took him to. Hmm. But he never uses that. The witnesses all say he used the stone and the hat.
How interesting. It's very certainly questionable, isn't it? Well, what about historians and archaeologists? How do they regard the Book of Mormon? People outside of the LDS Church?
Well, outside of Mormonism, archaeologists and historians don't take the Book of Mormon seriously. They don't see anything in it that relates to what anyone knows of American civilization prior to the Europeans coming. Mm-hmm. Mormons like to point to Mayan ruins and Mayan civilization or the Indian mounds in Ohio or wherever they want to point to. But these are all groups that have their own history, their own religious practices. Mm-hmm. They aren't Jewish Christians, as the Book of Mormon would demand.
Right, none
so
of those.
Outsiders see nothing in the Book of Mormon that connects them to real people that they could study anywhere.
And if this was a verifiable document, wouldn't universities or other educational institutions other than BYU and LDS use the Book of Mormon like they do the Bible to verify and to teach?
Right. And of course, one of the problems for the Book of Mormon is they don't have a map. They can't. I mean, how can you go study it or do archaeological studies if you can't even decide where the story happened? Uh-huh. And like the manual I have here that's a seminary manual, Book of Mormon Seminary Student Guide, that has maps in it of Israel. It has maps of Saudi Arabia, and it shows Lehi's travel through these places. But when you get to the Book of Mormon, there's no map. All there is at the back is a little diagram trying to show you where the cities of the Book of Mormon are at. But it's not a map.
But there's no locations.
But no locations. And then it says at the bottom, no effort should be made to identify points on this map with any existing geographical location. Well, why wouldn't you want to figure out where the story happened?
And Orson Pratt just said to do that. He says,
yes,
make every exertion to discover
right.
whether
right.
it's true or false. And so they're telling you not to do what he
right.
said to do.
Well, in their in their Doctrine and Covenants, in their triple combination of their scriptures, you'll find maps for the Doctrine and Covenants so that it shows you where the Mormons started out in New York, and they moved to Ohio, and then they moved to Illinois, and then they moved across the plains to come out here. And they have maps in there to show you how they traveled.
Mm-hmm.
But they never put a map in for the Book of Mormon. Now, if the Book of Mormon is history, why wouldn't it have a map the same as one showing how the Mormons traveled over to Salt Lake City?
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't you show where Lehi traveled and ended up? But in their own apologists for the Book of Mormon, they can't even decide among themselves where the story happened.
There's nothing in the Book of Mormon itself that would ever indicate for certainty
right.
where any of
right.
the
right.
places are.
So you have people today that have Book of Mormon tours.
Yeah.
And you can take a tour to the Ohio Valley and New York. That's supposed to be one group's idea of the Book of Mormon lands.
Mm-hmm.
But you go to another travel agent and they'll have Book of Mormon lands tour. They'll take you down to the Mayan ruins.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where did the book happen, you know, in New York or down in Guatemala?
And it should be verifiable. If yeah. it's true history, there should be verifiable data somewhere, somehow.
Right.
And when can you imagine someone going to Bible college or Bible study, a seminary, and being told that they're not supposed to investigate the origins of the things they're learning?
Right. Well, and you take in Israel, whenever they do road repairs or something, they're just as likely to turn up some archaeological site because real things happened
mm-hmm.
there. But
mm-hmm.
you don't find anyone digging up a road in New York or Ohio or
right.
Mayan lands. It turns out to be Nephite ruins.
Right.
They just aren't there. We don't have any.
One thing I've wondered is, and there's nothing wrong with this, but there's hordes of people that go over to Israel every
yeah.
year, and especially the holidays,
right?
Because they want to see the lands, they want to see where Jesus walked,
yeah.
and people do that, and they're really mm-hmm. touched and impressed by it. And I'm thinking, well, why can't they do that here? Jesus is supposed to walk here in the Americas,
yeah.
in this hemisphere, but there's no place they can go here
no.
to walk where Jesus supposedly walked.
Right, right. And that's the problem, that they want to put the Book of Mormon on the same level as a historical document as the Bible, and yet there's no historical underpinning for the story. So it's mm-hmm. strictly a matter of faith.
Mm-hmm. Strictly a matter. What about the language, the native language of the Book of Mormon? Supposedly Egyptian, or the Reformed Egyptian, or whatever.
Well,
that
and that's
might
one
be.
Of the problems you have with the story is it says they spoke their mother tongue, which we assume would be Hebrew, and yet they supposedly wrote it in Reformed Egyptian, and no one knows exactly what that means. Is that just Hebrew writing in Egyptian characters, and no one knows for sure? But there's no evidence of it.
Yeah.
And the problem is we do have samples from Joseph Smith of supposedly what the writing looked like on the plates. He supposedly copied some characters off.
Mm-hmm.
And those characters look nothing like Mayan characters. They're totally different. The Book of Mormon characters are very lineal. The Mayan characters are all fat drawings of animals, so it's a total different look to the script. So there's no sample of Book of Mormon writing anywhere.
And you would think there would even be even interlaced, you know, dialects, evolution maybe with Aramaic or Hebrew, and maybe interspersed in with some of the language, and too, but there's none of that.
No, when you look at the Mayan language, it does not show evidence of Hebrew in their language structure. And if the Book of Mormon peoples died out at 400 AD, and then you have Europeans coming 1,000 years later, linguists will tell you that's not enough time to lose all trace of a mother tongue.
So
there would have to be elements of Hebrew there if, in fact, these people were truly Israelites that brought Hebrew to the Americas.
What about the Smithsonian? Didn't they have to issue a statement regarding the historicity of this a couple of times, actually?
Yeah. Well, back, 40 years ago, there was a lot more talk about, I would hear Mormons say to me, well, you know, even the Smithsonian uses the Book of Mormon as a guide in trying to find locations. Well, there were so many things like this that were passed around that finally the Smithsonian made a formal statement that they see nothing in the Book of Mormon that connects to real history. And so they had a formal statement. If you wrote to them about the Book of Mormon, they would send that out. Now, I don't think they send that letter out anymore because it became politically incorrect to say something negative about someone's church. But they still have the same feelings. It's not because they believe there's any validity to the Book of Mormon. They see the... as far as I know, any anthropologist outside of Mormonism, and even some within, would agree that there is nothing physical to connect the Book of Mormon to the Americas to make it happen in real time. It's a matter of faith.
Blind faith, total blind faith. When a couple of weeks ago I emailed you know, when we were talking about some of the content of the show tonight, and I talked about witnesses, and you responded, and I'd like to read part of what you said in your response about the witnesses. It's very good. I think it's something people need to think about. You said the point of the Book of Mormon being a witness would center more in the fact that there is no evidence that it actually occurred. A witness to an accident can testify in court, but not a friend of a friend that just heard through the grapevine that there was an accident. If there were verifiable historical accounts that Christ appeared in the New World, that would be another witness for Christ, but only if it actually happened. Thus, there is historical evidence for the Old and New Testament, but none for the Book of Mormon.
Right. They want to put on the front of the Book of Mormon that it's another testament about Christ. Well, not if it didn't happen. Then one could say that the thousands of inspiring books at the Christian bookstore are testaments of Christ. They've got to actually be actual records of Christ appearing to be a testament.
Right. Exactly. B.H. Roberts was, even his contemporary said that he was probably one of the most brilliant men at the time. And he had some problems with the Book of Mormon as a Mormon historian. He was doing a lot of his studies.
Yes, he was a member of the 70, so people need to know he was a general authority. And besides being a historian, he was the one that compiled Joseph Smith's History of the Church. I mean, he was an extremely busy man dealing with historical issues for Mormonism.
And he had a big problem with the Book of Mormon when he started doing his studies. He came up with five questions that he took to the leadership for an answer. And he didn't get the answer he wanted. Probably didn't even into the day of his death. I don't think he got the answers he wanted. But he told a friend after he had confronted the LDS leadership with these questions, quote, that the defense that the church made for the Book of Mormon might satisfy people who didn't think, but was inadequate for the thinking man.
Right.
Would you agree?
Yes, absolutely. One of the problems that B.H. Roberts found as he continued in his studies of the Book of Mormon was that the Book of Mormon reflected the thinking of the day. It wasn't just out of the blue for Joseph to come up with a story. There were dozens of books at the time of the writing of the Book of Mormon that speculated that the American Indians were part of the Lost Tribes of Israel And there was a book called View of the Hebrews, printed in 1823, reprinted 1825, that had many of the same ideas about the Indians being Israelites. So as B.H. Roberts started studying, he more and more saw that there was a connection of thoughts, not the storyline, but the same concepts mm-hmm. in View of the Hebrews of the Israelites and the use of Isaiah. And many of the, he even speaks of Urim and Thummim, a lost book of the Indians and these things. And B.H. Roberts started to see, wow, if someone had read or was familiar with View of the Hebrews or these other books that were out before the Book of Mormon, it could have supplied the ideas for the Book of Mormon. Mm-hmm. And Roberts went on to write a whole book, a whole study on the problems of the Book of Mormon, which wasn't published during his lifetime. And it was his, when he died, his papers were held by the family. And then some years later, the family donated them to the University of Utah. Mm. And then Brigham B.H. Roberts' studies was printed. Mm-hmm. So now we can read his whole study that mm-hmm. he did. And as you go through that, you can see, even though he was a general authority, that he had was really struggling to try to have the Book of Mormon be any kind of history.
Yeah, in fact, he concluded that the Book of Mormon could not have come from golden plates or from God.
Right.
That it had to come from Joseph Smith himself.
Right.
And yet, the apologists today will say, well, Joseph Smith was young and he was uneducated. He couldn't have written the Book of Mormon.
Well, but we know from his own writings and from his family's that he had studied the Bible from the age of 12. He went to revival meetings as a teenager. He was an exhorter at the Methodist camp meetings as a teenager, which meant he had to be pretty good at knowing his scriptures. An exhorter was someone who, after the minister preached, got up and exhorted people mm-hmm. to follow through on what the minister had preached that night. Mm-hmm. So for someone to turn the pulpit over to him to let him exhort shows that he was pretty involved in theological discussions. Mm-hmm. Other accounts talk of him being in a debating club as a teenager. So this was an active mind. Mm-hmm. He didn't have many years of formal schooling, but how many kids today are homeschooled? That doesn't mean you're not schooled simply mm-hmm. because you sit at home and learn.
Yeah, and he had access to a lot of books and the library.
Yeah, there were lending libraries in his hometown. His folks subscribed to the newspaper. Mm-hmm. So he was exposed to plenty of ideas and knowledge around him.
What about some of the internal problems of the Book of Mormon? For instance, the chariots, they say there's chariots and the animals and some of these foods and seeds that are not
right.
local. I mean, this world doesn't have, this hemisphere doesn't have them.
The Book of Mormon speaks of chariots and horses, and it's not just one reference like there was only one. It talks of them having many horses and chariots. And it's not just one reference, it's a number of references through the book to this. And so it's obvious that they were supposed to represent a part of the regular lifestyle, at least for the armies, mm-hmm. of having horses and chariots.
Yeah.
And yet, it doesn't matter what archaeologist you want to read, outside of Mormonism, they will tell you that we did not have a horse here during the Book of Mormon time period. Now, you can point to prehistoric animals, like in the La Brea tar pit or something, but those are little animals that are precursors of the horse. It's not a horse.
You could hardly use it in military
metaphors. No, you're not going to pull a chariot with it. And so then they'll say, well, maybe they just used the name horse, and maybe it wasn't really a horse. Maybe it was some other animal, you know. And I said, okay, what other animal are you going to use? If you're going to make the Book of Mormon happen in Mayan area, what pack animal?
Yeah.
What beast of burden would be available to use to pull a chariot? There isn't one. They have deers. Deers are too fragile. They're too skittish. Mm-hmm. Skinny little legs. They aren't going to pull a chariot. And so someone mentioned a tapir. Well, that is like a big hog. You know, I mean, it's a kind of a, and as I recall, they're nocturnal animals. And they're not something you're going to hook to a chariot. So there's no domesticated animal within the Mayan area that you could have used, even if you had a chariot.
Well,
but the chariot is the problem itself.
Yeah,
There were no chariots. The Indians did not have the concept of the wheel before mm-hmm. the Europeans. Now, the Mormons like to show these little toys that had wheels. I don't know who made them or when, but the knowledge of transporting with wheels was not known amongst the Indians. And it's just the problem all the way through the Book of Mormon is you have mention of animals, plant life. It says they raised wheat. Mm-hmm. Wheat wasn't introduced till the Europeans came. It says they had silk. There was no silk here.
No silk, right.
So that you find these oddities in the story that when a scholar, an anthropologist, looks at the Book of Mormon internally, they say, this doesn't sound like something that could have happened in the time frame. And so it'd be like me saying, I found Columbus' diary, and in it, it says that he listened to the radio on the way over.
Yeah.
You know, you say, no, I don't think that's a real thing. And that's the problem the scientist has when he looks at the Book of Mormon. They got horses and chariots. Not only that, they got steel swords.
And bows. And smelting.
The smelting. Coins. Well, the Mormons want to argue, well, the Book of Mormon doesn't say coins, but it talks about the pieces of money that they had, which have to mean coin, and gold and silver. Well, there just wasn't that kind of usage amongst the Indians. Everything we know about the Indians says that was never a part of their life. They didn't have steel, and they didn't have swords. What the Mayans had was a kind of a machete club thing, big wood club that had obsidian blade sticking out the edges of this so you could whack someone with. But you wouldn't call it a sword. And in the Book of Mormon, they have armor. They're going out with their breastplates on and they're sheathing their sword, you know. So it's obviously not a club. They're talking about a real sword.
Right. Let's quickly talk. We'll open up the phone lines now, and you can call in and stay on topic and ask Sandra any question or make a comment regarding our topic tonight. The number is 801-973-TV20. 801-973-8820. Geographically, Zarahemla is mentioned, and I believe there's millions of people involved in living, residents of Zarahemla. Nobody knows where that's at. There's no evidence of it. But what about Hill Cumorah? That seems to be a controversial location. Didn't Joseph Smith say Hill Cumorah was in New York?
Well, that was everyone's understanding, and Joseph seems to have been the one that gave everyone that idea, that he went to the hill to get the plates, and that was the Hill Cumorah. Early Mormons all assumed that was the same hill where the last battle was fought in the Book of Mormon. But if you look at BYU today, their men want to make the Book of Mormon happen down in the Mayan areas. Then they make the Hill Cumorah in southern Mexico.
So there's two Hill Cumorahs.
According to the BYU guys, you have to have two Hill Cumorahs. You have to have the one in Mexico where they fought the battle, and then you have to have Moroni, the last guy in the story, carry the plates clear up to New York to bury him so Joseph can find them. If you go with the newer model that this man by the name of Meldrum puts out, he argues for Ohio, New York area for the Book of Mormon lands. Then he gets to have Cumorah in the Hill Cumorah in the right place, but it makes other problems for him. There's no ruins or anything to tie into.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody said the church could put the controversy to rest just by taking their bulldozers up to Hill Cumorah and excavating it and finding all these skeletons and weaponry and all that if the battle took place there.
Right.
There would have to be evidence if it was true.
Or they could even just make a prophetic announcement. They will not even make an official statement where the Book of Mormon lands were. So even by revelation, they won't declare, yes, the Book of Mormon happened in North America. Yes, the Book of Mormon happened in South America. It only happened in Guatemala. They won't make a declarative statement on just what is official Book of Mormon lands. Well, why not? I mean, I don't have a problem saying where Jerusalem's at.
Right.
So why would they have a problem announcing where the Book of Mormon happened?
Exactly. What about the names that are found in the Book of Mormon? The names of cities, towns, people. Are there any evidences that they're in any other cultural writings of the Americas? Do these names fit?
No. There are some of the names that sound like places around Joseph Smith. I mean, there is a Lehigh Valley in his area, but it's not spelled like Lehigh in the Book of Mormon. But it would sound the same when you spoke it. The Comoros Islands with a capital Moroni is a place that I'm very curious about Joseph Smith hearing about that to come up with those names.
Yeah, I am too, as well.
But when you look at the names in the Book of Mormon, sometimes Mormons have made issues about how could you come up with all these new names. half of the proper names in the Book of Mormon are Bible names, and the other half, a good portion of them, are just rearranging syllables of Bible names.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that as well.
Yeah.
One more question before we get to the telephone. The barges.
Jaredi barges, yes.
Yeah, there's all kinds of problems with that,
yes.
You know, and we could probably spend a whole other show just talking about them. They brought swine on the barges, and of course, Jews can't have pigs in their possession or eating it or anything like that. But they had these 8 vessels that had a hole in the top and a hole in the bottom. Mm-hmm. It took almost a year to make the journey from there to here, or wherever here is. And I had a caller one time ask me, talking about the barges, and he says, you know, the Christians like to complain about these barges quite a bit. Of course, mm-hmm. we know why. But he said, in the Bible, there's a story of Noah's Ark. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge, humongous, and in a sense, a miracle that, mm-hmm. that all this happened. Why can't the Mormons have their miracle with the barges in the Book of Mormon like the Christians have their miracle of the Noah's Ark in the Old Testament?
Well, someone can build a boat like Noah talked about. How could anyone build 8 barges like Joseph Smith talked about? I mean, these are impossible
right.
vessels to really take a trip in, because you've got wild animals that they're bringing with them. They're supposed to have their horses and cows and all this stuff with them. Okay, so you got 8 barges that are tight like a dish and shaped like a football, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
There's no rudder, there's no sail, there's nothing to guide these. There's no way to have light. God finally gives them a couple of shining rocks for each vessel so they'll have light. But the hole in the top and the bottom, one can only assume it's because they're going to flip over.
Mm-hmm.
Why else would you have one
That's
on the bottom?
That's what we were taught, yeah.
You know, so, I mean, this is a heck of a ride when you read the story in Ether about the barges, because it says they're pushed down to the depths of the ocean, and they cry out for God's mercy, and they come back up on the water again. This is a year,
mm-hmm.
a year. With how do you connect these boats? You don't. You have the 8 coming across with no sails or rudders or anything
mm-hmm.
to guide them. They all stay together, land at the same place, same time. How do you have these people and animals in these barges? You don't have enough water. How could you have food for a year for all these people and animals in each of these barges?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are just impossible feats. But you couldn't make a vessel that's like a submarine. The pressure
right.
exerted
exactly.
on these vessels to be pushed down to the bottom of the ocean. And, well, you take divers, you know, you can't bring them up too fast because they get the bends and mm-hmm. all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
mm-hmm.
they're going down and coming back up.
With no technology.
With no technology. I mean, the force would have broken the barges apart. I mean, this is like, 2700 BC or something when this is supposed to have happened at the time of the Tower of Babel. How would you make these kind of vessels that could withstand
right.
the pressure, or that could carry the amount of food needed?
And the animals.
Well,
and
how
the,
could
and
you
the
have air?
Together?
If you're going to be crushed down to the bottom of the ocean, how do you have fresh air in these vessels for this trip down and up? I mean, it would, yes, you could always plead miracle.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's all it could be.
That's evidently what they're doing. But even with Noah's Ark, God gave dimensions. He gave
yeah.
height, width, how to build it, what kind of wood to build
yeah.
it, how to cover it with pitch and 3 level. Yeah, he gave complete instructions. The architect
yeah.
gave the instructions. We don't get any of this.
No.
And it's logical. It's legal.
Yeah.
Modern day shipping, shipbuilders will tell you that this is a valid blueprint for a floating
for a boat. You really make something,
vehicle.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've got some calls in. Let's start with Douglas from Salt Lake City on line 2. It's not lit up. I hope it's there. Hello, Douglas.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
There was an Ethan Smith who was a pastor who wrote that book, A View to the Hebrews, before the Book of Mormon. Oliver Cowdery, who was one of the scribes with Joseph Smith, knew Ethan Smith. Joseph Smith was known as a storyteller as he was growing up. And so he had, like you said, a pretty good understanding of the Bible. So he could have very easily constructed, using these other books, the Book of Mormon.
Right.
It would be 1800s fiction. And wouldn't it be better for the church to just say that this is truly fiction and that it gave us lessons to learn from, rather than to try and make it historical?
Well, I think the best lesson would be thou shalt not lie.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, Douglas, we appreciate your call and your comments. Thank you.
You have a wonderful week, and God bless.
Thank you, and bye. Okay, we have line 3, Herman from Provo. Hello, Herman. Hello, Herman. Hello.
Connect.
Hello.
Hello, yes, you're on the air.
Okay, I'd like to ask Mrs. Tanner about what happened, why did the Angel Moroni, why the Angel Moroni took the plates away from Joseph Smith after he translated them?
Well, we don't know why. That's just the way he tells the story, that when he finished translating, he gave them back to the angel who took them away. And one would think if it was real history and a real document, it could have been kept around as an evidence for the proof of his story.
And wouldn't that be a good evidence?
Yeah.
Like when you go to court and you got to have evidence to get, see if anything is right.
Right, certainly.
I don't know that the angel, that Book of Mormon would have been the best evidence in the history.
Absolutely.
To have something like
yes.
that.
If he had had a real record, it certainly would have proved his case to have been able to have shown it to someone.
Exactly right. And then you answered my question about those 8 submarines. I wanted to ask you about that.
Yes.
How can a person go down in the ocean for a whole year and had 2 holes, and the Lord told them to put 2 holes, one on top and one on the bottom.
Right.
And then take all the animals. You answer me, Alexa, you answer me that question on that.
Yeah.
I've read the book about 5 times now, and every time I read the Book of Mormon, new stuff comes up.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for your call and for your comments, Herman.
Thank you.
And good night.
Right.
Okay, we have Jason calling from Riverton. Hello, Jason. Yes, you're on the air.
Okay, hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Well, you guys say that the Book of Mormon cannot be another testament of Christ because Joseph Smith wasn't an author. But that's the point. He wasn't an author. He was a translator.
No, that isn't what we said.
Authors were people like Nephi and Alma who were actually there.
There's no evidence that those people ever existed.
Hello?
He's listening to his
TV. We have the evidence from the plates that Joseph Smith translated.
But we don't have the plates. I mean, it's just like with many other religions that have their scriptures, anyone can say they had a revelation from God. But there's no evidence that Nephites and Lamanites ever existed other than in Joseph Smith's mind.
Well, there's also no evidence that that some of the things in the Bible, like the dove coming down when Jesus was baptized, was actually there, that someone didn't actually create that, like Matthew. And
we had 4 witnesses, at least, that wrote it down. 4 different witnesses that wrote that incident down.
Well, we have real Hebrews and real Christians and a real Jerusalem. One can say, I don't choose to believe Jesus was the Messiah, but there's no doubt he was a historical figure. With the Book of Mormon peoples, there's nothing to substantiate this culture ever happened. And we have millions of people in the Book of Mormon story supposedly going to war and dying and carrying on for centuries here. But there's absolutely not one piece of evidence that this culture ever existed. We have evidence there was a Hebrew and Christian culture.
Mm-hmm.
See, the point of the Book of Mormon, though, is not to prove that they were actually there. It's to read it and to understand what they went through so you don't have to go through that in your life. That's the point of the Book of Mormon. It's not a historical record.
It has to be a historical record to be another testament of Christ.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just an inspiring fiction that you could find many like that at the bookstore.
That's not true. I mean, it's the point of the Book of Mormon is to teach and preach and to better your life. It's
but
not
why
to go over the history of the people in South America.
Why would we have to take it more seriously than a novel like Paul Bunyan or something if it didn't really happen?
And Jason, I'd like to ask a question as well. At the beginning of the show, Orson Pratt, who was one of the 12 apostles, he encouraged everybody to study to see if the Book of Mormon was true, to look at the evidence and to prove it's either true or false. Now, it's either true or false. Even the leadership of the church challenged us to prove its veracity. So why are you now saying it's not necessary?
Oh, I definitely think it's necessary to examine the Book of Mormon to its fullest to see if it's true. But you're taking the Book of Mormon on what it's not supposed to be. You're taking it on a different meaning. You're taking it as a history textbook when it's supposed to be a book to better your life.
It is still claiming to be an actual record of real people in real time in the Americas. If those people did not exist, then this what is contained in the Book of Mormon has no more validity than any novel.
Yes, but a lot of your just theories are what you're saying. You say that there are no animals there, but there are definitely circumstances that could have changed the South.
Jason, you're talking about theory. The whole Book of Mormon premise is based on theory. What Sandra and I have been talking about tonight are the facts that have come together through many, many scientific and archaeological and historical research.
According to your word, though.
But, well, your own Mormon historians cannot show that there were ever horses and chariots during the Book of Mormon time period in the Americas.
But nor can you disprove that they were not there.
Well, I can't disprove that Hitler lived at that time either, but I don't think he did. It's a silly argument.
Well, the difference between Hitler and horses in South America is quite a stretch. If you want to go on that boat.
Well, I'm just saying there is no reason to accept this book as a historical study. It claims to be real people in real time, in real places.
Exactly, exactly. It's not supposed to be a historical study.
But it has to be based on history.
To better your life. It's not about the history of the people. It's about their choices,
Jason,
and what you should not do in your life to avoid pain and sorrow.
This is becoming a circular argument, and so we're going to close a conversation, but I need to say this at this point. All we need to base what we would do or not do and make decisions in our life is the Bible. We don't need the Book of Mormon as well, and I have another call to take right now, so thank you. Okay, line 3, we have Brad from Salt Lake City. Hello, Brad.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
Very good, thank you. You're on the air. What's your question?
Oh, great. I haven't heard you folks discuss the DNA evidence that we have now that refutes the Middle Eastern element that should be in Joseph Smith's version of the Central American population versus what we now know is a Asian element, and the Maxwell Institute's apologist views on what science tells us and what they say. Really appreciate hearing your point on that.
Right. A Mormon scientist by the name of Simon Southerton studied the DNA a few years ago, and he wrote a book, Losing a Lost Tribe, which we sell at our bookstore, where he examines Book of Mormon problems, but he specifically looked at the DNA problem. If the Book of Mormon is true, these people would be Israelites that existed in thousands or millions here in the Americas, not just a few little people that got swallowed up in the bigger Mayan culture, but armies that went out and fought in tens of thousands on each side. So one would expect there to be evidence of a Semitic presence in the Americas during the Book of Mormon time period. And yet DNA shows that the American Indians are Asian, and they are not Semitic people. So then the Maxwell Institute wants to have their answers to that. But if you go to the publisher's website that publishes Simon's book, Signature Books, at Signature Books website, they have an article by Simon where he responds to the Maxwell Institute and shows that their arguments to downplay the problem of the DNA don't really hold water, that he's a DNA scientist himself. He deals with plant life, but the DNA is the same kind of a study all across the board. Certainly, he has more scientific background in DNA study than any of the men at the BYU that are writing on it. And he answers this and shows that, no, they still have not determined a Semitic origin in the American Indians. They all come out Asiatic.
The Maxwell Institute view is, they've got two views. One of those is called a founder's effect. In other words, Lehi would have had to have some kind of a mutation in his DNA that would have spread to all generations past. However, mm-hmm. Lehi wasn't the only one that came over on the initial crossing. There was also the daughters of Ishmael and right. their sons, and then there's the mitochondrial side, which is the lady side, you know, ladies, mothers passing it on to daughters. It's a completely ridiculous.
Well, and they aren't the only group. You have the Mulekites that come over at about the same time that are supposed to be Israelites as well, that come over and mix in with the Nephites. So there would have been plenty of Israelite DNA, it would seem, in the group, not just from Lehi, but from these different other families, groups that were there as well, but it just doesn't show.
Does that help you, Brad?
That was great. I appreciate the having me on, and I enjoyed the program.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have Dal calling from Brigham City. Hello, Dal.
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Okay.
What is your question?
I was curious to know if you've seen Jesus Christ.
No, I've never seen him.
Have you seen him, Dal?
You know, I haven't either.
Is that your only point?
Well, I was curious. The old world connection, we don't explore that enough. I know Hugh Nip explored it quite a bit in his books about the old world connection, you know, at the time of Lehi and Solon from Greece.
Well, I'm not sure what connection you think is important there.
And, well, you've got the Bible, but yet you haven't seen Christ. We have the Book of Mormon, and yet I haven't seen Christ.
No, but there's historical evidence for different cities and people of the Bible. You can study their languages. We have nothing like that for the Book of Mormon. There's no artifact, no language, no people, no cities, nothing.
But you still haven't seen him.
But no. We don't have to see him. All we have to do is have the historical record, a verifiable historical record that he exists.
And then we have faith in what the historical record tells us. But it's not a blind faith. I mean, I could just invent a book now and say it's scripture. Yeah, I talked to Jesus. Here's my new scripture.
Yeah.
And you'd say, why should I believe that?
Well, it sounds like we both have to accept it on faith, then, it looks like.
But not blind faith, Dal. Not blind faith. Faith based on facts. Verifiable facts.
Well, like the DNA is not complete. The ribonucleic science has not said the final word on DNA studies yet.
DNA is just one nail in the coffin.
Well, let's just start with a map. If we're going to talk about real people, we got to know where the story happened. And the Mormon themselves cannot decide where the story happened.
Well, I think the science behind all of this is still not complete yet.
We know where Jerusalem's at. No one can tell me where Zarahemla is.
Yeah, we've only had 500 years to study the New World. We haven't had thousands of years like we have from the Old World.
If the New World had a culture like the Book of Mormon, there should have been remnants of that in the dirt that would have been found by now to establish that big a land culture.
And there's not one shred of evidence, not one single thing that will back up
the
Book of Mormon.
Well, what should have and what has actually happened are two different things. We can't determine what those are by ourselves.
Well, the greatest Mayan archaeologist, Michael Coe, C-O-E, Michael Coe, has gone on record about the Book of Mormon that there's just nothing. He sees nothing in the Mayans, nothing in the American Indians to support
that. It comes from the Zapotec and the Chavin and the Olmec. You're not even talking about the right people. You're
Which
talking
people?
About the later cultures. The Mayas and the Aztecs.
Okay, what group are you going to make the Book of Mormon happen in? What city? Where are you going to place the story?
From 2300 BC down to 400 AD.
Where? Where is it happening?
In the Northern Hemisphere. They didn't even know the Northern Hemisphere was here until Columbus.
Well, we've got to, we're doing some more circular reasoning here, and we got to start closing down the show. We're getting close to the end, Dal, so thank you for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. We do have another call from Glenn in Spanish Fork. I don't think we're going to have time to take it. And very, very quickly, how do the Dead Sea Scrolls impact the Book of Mormon and the Bible? Can you answer that in 30 seconds?
Well, with the Dead Sea Scrolls, it verified the Old Testament. It took us back hundreds of years on our manuscript evidence for the Old Testament that showed all those writings predated the time of Christ. Isaiah's prophecies, all these things were there before the time mm-hmm. of Christ. But we have nothing like that for the Book of Mormon. There's no ancient text that's been found anywhere that identifies with these people named in the Book of Mormon.
Nothing
we have ancient texts that deal with the Hebrews. We have nothing that deals with Lamanites or
okay.
Nephites.
Very good. And I want to thank you for coming
yes.
tonight, Sandra. We made a dent, but we
yes,
didn't do
it went
the
very
whole thing.
Fast.
And I'd just like to make my closing comments. The Bible's been proven accurate over and over again through archaeology and through history and through scientifically and through fulfilled prophecy. And it has survived every test. Its integrity, that it is a preserved Bible, just as God promised. But the Book of Mormon fails every single one of the tests. And relying on blind faith to support your belief in the Book of Mormon only fulfills what Jesus warned us about when he said, "The blind lead the blind, and they will both fall into the pit." To trust an unproven document and hold it higher and higher esteem than a well-proven document like the Bible is disobedience to God and is spiritual suicide. Jesus promised that heaven and earth would pass away, but he said, "My words will never pass away." So who's telling the truth here? And are you going to fall into the pit because you trusted blind faith? Ecclesiastes 3:14 says, "I perceive that whatever God does endures forever." Psalm 119:89 says, "Forever, O Lord, thy word is settled in heaven." Psalm 119:152 says, "Long ago I learned from your statutes that you established them to last forever." 1 Peter 1:25, "But the word of the Lord endures forever, and this is the word by which the gospel was preached to you." According to God's promises, the Bible's truths were never lost or corrupted. The gospel was never lost. Your eternity depends upon who you choose to believe. And if you choose to believe Jesus, you must throw out everything and everyone else, including salvation and celestial marriage, and trust in Jesus alone for your eternity, and you'll be safe. Thank you and good night.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email@whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.